This is Y Nada Más, a Real Madrid Podcast.
Everybody, what is going on? Welcome back to Y Nada Más, a Real Madrid podcast. I am your host, Eric Rivera, and we are back from the international break, and time to celebrate, essentially, we came back from the international break. The team looks in good form. We got a great win over Granada this weekend, and we're heading, obviously, into a very, very difficult period for Real Madrid, where there's going to be a lot of games. We're going to be facing a lot of tough teams such as Inter, Sevilla, Atletico Madrid at the end of this run. So we are playing on Wednesday. I am recording this, of course, on Sunday evening. We are playing on Wednesday in the Champions League. We are going all the way to Moldova. Meaning Real Madrid, because I'm personally not going, of course. So Real Madrid is going to Moldova, and they will be facing Sheriff Tiraspol in what can only be labeled as a revenge match for Real Madrid, because, of course, there was a lot of talk after that game where we lost against Sheriff Tiraspol. And there was a lot of things that were said after that game of it being an accident, of it being a fluke. So the biased Madridista in me would say it was somewhat of a fluke, because if you really look at the stats of that game, and I'm not going to go over it, I went over it a little bit, you know, after that game happened, but the stats of that game, we really did throw, you know, pretty much everything at Sheriff Tiraspol. Their goalkeeper was on fire. Their defense was being able to block everything. We were just not able to capitalize on anything that we were, you know, any of the shots we made on goal. We essentially threw everything at them, and we could not score, and they were able to score. So will that be, I mean, and that's kind of the you know, I remember talking about that whole any given Sunday mentality, the any given Sunday, or the idea that, the any given Sunday, something that is said in American football, which basically means, you know, because most of the games are played on Sunday in the NFL. What that means is that on any given Sunday, essentially a team, you know, it doesn't matter if they're like, you know, 0-4, 0-5, you know, they lost their last five games, they've lost their last six or seven. On any given Sunday, a small team can beat a big team. And that was Sheriff Tiraspol's any given Sunday moment. You know, that was the chance that they got to show and play one of the big dogs and essentially shock everybody and get the upset. However, getting the upset, you know, consistently is something that, you know, usually those teams that have that any given Sunday moment don't have. Unless we're talking about Leicester back in, you know, a few years ago in the Premier League, where they're having these any given Sunday moments week in and week out, and they end up winning the league. Sheriff Tiraspol, I don't see them doing that. I mean, Inter has already won against them done us a favor and brought them back to reality. But, they are a very hungry team, and they're definitely going to defend, and they're definitely going to play their hearts out when we visit their home in Moldova. So it's going to be an interesting matchup, but I'm pretty sure, I think a couple of different things is that Real Madrid is not going to take that game easy. And I think they gave them maybe underestimated a team like Sheriff Tiraspol way too much in that game in the Bernabeu. It was also, I think that was our, what, was that our, that was our first UCL game back at the Bernabeu. So I think it's going to be a different feeling this time around. You know, we're going out there to play and the team looks hungry. Vinicius looks hungry. Benzema, you know, he didn't do so well in this last game against Granada. He wasn't at his best, but there was a lot of things that I think kind of flew under the radar in that game with Benzema. I think he did better than, you know, some people give him credit for. And what happens in a team like Madrid is when we have a squad that I feel is doing really do well and playing well right now, the important thing is at least, you know, what we had last season is essentially that Benzema was the only guy that was really scoring any goals for us. This season, I think the whole team is really coming together and putting goals into the net and essentially scoring goals. And it's not coming just from Benzema. It's coming from Vinicius. It's coming from, you know, we've seen Toni Kroos score goals. We've seen Asensio now score goals. We've seen Rodrigo as well. So, you know, the team is really, it has become quite of more aggressive offensively. And I think it's not only left up to one person. So I think the good thing about that, when that happens, as opposed to last season, is you're not relying on one guy only. So if one guy has sort of an off day, there's somebody else there to pick up the slack, because there's always going to be a player. I don't think, you know, there are those perfect games where all players are just firing on all cylinders and they're doing really well. But there are those games where one guy might be a little bit off and somebody else has to pick up the slack, or the rest of the team picks up the slack for the day that that guy is a little bit off. So there's going to be those days, you know, where one player is just not going to be on. And I think Benzema's game was kind of that one where he wasn't entirely, you know, he wasn't the goal scorer that, you know, he wasn't the one that was, you know, putting the goals in the back of the net, but I think he did well in helping the team out and eventually achieving that 4-1 scoreline. So, you know, a lot of things to talk about, I guess. You know, definitely going to review the Granada game, talk about the Granada game, tell you guys a little bit of my thoughts, and then other stuff, that I guess, that's going on, extracurricular, I guess, of things that are going on and sounding off in the news. So before that, you know, once again, you know, of course, you know, if you want, I always like to talk about the social media, guys. So please, you know, if you are listening to the podcast, please remember to follow us on Instagram, which is YNM Podcast. That is our Instagram account. We are trying to grow it, guys. You know, I have a talented graphic designer. Well, you know, I'm not talking just about myself, but I have another designer friend of mine that helps me out with some of the designs there on the page. So please, you know, check it out. We're trying to, you know, we put up the scores, we put up the lineups and everything like that. So we are sharing that on Instagram. So check us out at YNM Podcast on Instagram. I am most active on Twitter, and that's where you can find me a lot of times interacting. It's been a lot less, more so lately, because of the fact, you know, my day job, of course, I have to make sure things are getting done at my day job, and I don't, you know, lose the thing that really gives my family, it puts food on the table for my family. So of course I got to focus on that. So I haven't been as active on Twitter as I would like, but during the games I definitely am. And every once in a while I jump in there and to see what craziness is going on in football Twitter. So you guys can definitely check me out there at Y Nada Más Podcast on Twitter. That is me, myself. Nobody else is running that account. That's myself. So feel free to hit me up there and to, you know, whatever. You know, if you want to shoot me a question, if you want to, you know, hit up, ask me something, or you want to tell me I suck, whatever. I don't care. Or you don't like my podcast, or you don't like my opinion. Well, you can do that there. So that's at YNM Podcast. I'm sorry, at Y Nada Más Podcast on Twitter. Adding Y Nada Más Podcast on Facebook. Of course, we are on Facebook as well. And we are also on the web at ynadamas.net. As for the podcast, if you are watching, you are, of course, watching on our YouTube channel. If you are not watching, you can, of course, listen to the podcast on all the outlets for, you know, streaming podcasts or wherever you find your favorite podcasting content. So that would be on, of course, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn. I mean, we're on everything, really. So just look it up and you will find us. Look us up at Y Nada Más Podcast. Of course, guys, if you are on Apple Podcasts, I do ask you a big favor. You guys that can listen to me on Apple Podcasts, please, please, please leave a rating. Leave a rating. And also, if you want, leave a comment. But leaving a rating and helping us get more ratings, of course, helps us rise up in the ranks of the podcasting library there on there on Apple Podcasts. So it helps us out a lot. And for you guys, if you are listening and want to get a video version of the podcast, I am starting, you know, we started doing these video versions of the podcast, me shooting here in this little studio. And of course, you can see the video version of the podcast on YouTube. Check out our YouTube. Just look up Y Nada Más Podcast. You will find us on YouTube. And if you can, please tell other people to subscribe, hit the notification button. Look, guys, even if you don't, you know, frequent YouTube a lot and you're not watching a lot of things on YouTube, please help me out in growing the subscriber base there, because as we grow, of course, you know, I get other features unlocked on YouTube, and I of course can get the vanity URL, and I can do other things with the YouTube channel. So I'd really appreciate, guys, if you are listening and you're a fan of the podcast. I mean, you don't have to go on there and listen to it or watch the video. You know, I would love if you did, but I, you know, the best thing to do is hit that subscribe button and hit that notification button, so you know when the videos come out. So with that said, guys, I mean, let's get into it. Of course, you know, it was a win for Real Madrid against Granada. So we'll put up our celebratory music here, or a celebratory chant. That's right. We won 4-1, ladies and gentlemen. 4-1 against Granada in El Estadio Los Cármenes, which is, of course, in Granada. So we will, you know, we got that 4-1. Win away from home, and with goals by starting off with Asensio, then Nacho, then Vinicius Jr., and then finally Ferlan Mendy with that 4-1 scoreline. We did, of course, concede a goal, which kind of we always do. We kind of fall asleep, and that's one of the issues that we've been having as of late. You know, we fall asleep. I think, like I said, I think I discussed that on the last podcast. Is it by design that we do that? Is it by design? Is Ancelotti kind of telling them, you know, go up on the score kind and then just, you know, you guys can relax a little bit? Are the players tired? Are they fatigued? I mean, I know some of them came back. Some of them did play during international break, such as, of course, you know, Vinicius, Benzema, Luka Modric. You know, there were players that did play for their national teams. And I think, of course, that always plays a little bit. I mean, that definitely takes away from, I would say, their fitness, can affect their fitness. But I'm wondering if it seems like it's more, because definitely if they were able to come back and score two more goals after going two up and then conceding, and then were able to, you know, get two more goals in the second half and looked much better in the second half, essentially getting that second wind. I don't know if it's so much fitness or if it's been sort of an approach. I don't know if it's kind of like a lackadaisical opponent. That's the word I was using a lot, a lackadaisical or lackadaisical approach to playing, you know, after going up, like after getting the goals, kind of sitting back and relaxing way too much and then allowing the team to get back into it. I think that has been an issue as of late. We're always making things. A lot of people, I think, on Twitter talk about it, on football Twitter. You guys, you know, always mention it. Can we go one game without making Courtois, well, of course, he is a superhero, but without having to make him, you know, make these superhero saves, and where he can, you know, at least have a game where he's, I would say in Spanish, tranquilo, you know, a little bit more relaxed, you know, especially against a team where we were dominating the game throughout, you know, and then just not let a goal in. I mean, granted, the shot from Luis Suarez, not the Luis Suarez from Atletico, of course, who is the Colombian Luis Suarez, so a paisano of mine, Colombian Luis Suarez from Granada, you know, he shot a great shot on goal. It was deflected. So I think, in fairness to the team, I think, had it been on goal and I think Courtois could have stopped it. But essentially, I think they gave him the space. We let them back in. And even the commentators were talking about it as you were watching it. You got this feeling after we went two up, after Nacho was able to score that goal from the corner, from Toni Kroos's corner kick, we were able to see that they definitely had this once again where they go up and then it seems like they just kind of sit back and relax a little bit. And they relax, in this case, too much. Let the teams back into the game. Which obviously, to the chagrin of many of our Madridistas, of my fellow Madridistas, you guys, we always look at the second half and then we're all worried about, oh my God, are we going to be able to pull this one out? Especially, I think, in a game away from home. And it doesn't matter where the teams are on the table, because people could say, oh, well, you scored 4-1 against Granada. It's funny because I think for a lot of us Madridistas, we're not as worried about the big teams essentially as we are against some of these smaller teams, because it seems like Real Madrid's modus operandi, their MO as of late, has been to concede or draw or have difficult games against teams that essentially on paper look like the most beatable teams in the league or are the teams that aren't doing as well in the league. And then when we play the teams that are at the top in the upper echelon, of course, of the league, then, we seem to fare better. I don't know if it happens, a lot of these teams play the low block. They sit back and defend, and they're waiting to counterattack. And then we commit too many numbers forward and essentially get caught in a counter. A lot of those teams seem to understand that that's one of the only ways they can get back on Madrid. And with their defense being somewhat shaky at times, I think it's gotten a lot better as of late, of course, with the likes of with Militao and with Alaba, and Nacho had a good game against Granada, besides the deflection that made it into the goal we conceded. Then I think honestly, I think things are getting a little bit better in that regard. But when those teams lock up, we're always sort of struggling against these tougher teams. But when against these smaller teams, having a tougher time against them. But then when we play the big teams, a couple different people on Twitter were asking questions. Who do you feel is really the legitimate threats right now in La Liga for Real Madrid? And of course, I think it's right now, Barcelona is going through a whole restructuring phase. They got Xavi. They're all singing the high heavens that he's the greatest thing ever. And, we haven't seen, I honestly didn't see anything other than, an attempt for the first half at tiki-taka of old. It was the same Barcelona we've been seeing. So that had to grind out a win against Espanyol with a BS penalty, in my opinion, given to them. So I don't think that they're obviously they are not the rivals of old. So this season is essentially, I think it's Real Madrid's season to lose, to be honest with you. The teams that are really the contenders, I think in that case, are of course Atletico Madrid, of course, and then I think Sevilla, who Sevilla dropped points, this weekend, of course. Atletico Madrid almost dropped points. They were able to get a goal in the end. And then Real Sociedad dropped points, which, of course, put us at the top of the league. We are now líderes. We are, as of this podcast, as of you guys listening to this podcast, we are leaders, and we are currently leaders. And we will be until we go into the next, seeing what happens in the next match day. So, it's interesting. I think it is Real Madrid's league to lose, but I do feel I feel like we can win the league. But the toughest teams really are going to be Real Sociedad, Sevilla, and Atletico. Those are the ones that are going to be giving us problems. It's not going to be likes of Barcelona this year, who are really trying to dig themselves out of a hole at this point. So, going back to the defense, I think we're getting better. So when we play those bigger teams, like the ones I mentioned that are our contenders, those teams, since they're trying, they're not trying to sit back and, you know, sit back and defend only against Real Madrid. They are trying to attack as well. They are trying to score. And essentially, they are leaving space. They are leaving openings. They are leaving, you know, gaps that the team, that Real Madrid can exploit. And especially with the likes of guys like Toni Kroos and Luka Modric, who are once again showcasing to the world that they are two of the greatest, if not the greatest midfielders in the world currently at the moment, continue to showcase that, you know, if, you know, you give them the opportunities, they will slice through you and they will be able to get the ball to either Benzema, to Asensio, who had a good game yesterday, you know, had a good game yesterday as well, and Sunday, today, because it's late in the evening. So, you know, so they were able to score. Those guys were able to score. And then Vinicius, of course, Vinicius, you know, I think, you know, we have to talk about Vinicius. And, you know, there's been a lot of things said. I mean, there was chatter on El Chiringuito tonight, really pretty much the Chiringuito, which was a Sunday night Chiringuito, was talking about is a Vinicius. I mean, there was a, to me as a Madridista, I'll tell you the truth. To me as a Madridista, the poll that they put up on El Chiringuito was, is Vinicius the best player in the world right now? Essentially at this moment, is he the best player in the world at this moment? And I think I agree with some of the other people on El Chiringuito that would say, I think you do Vinicius a disservice by saying, or how would you say in Spanish, you say endiosándolo, or basically making him out to be this world beater so soon, the next Ballon d'Or so soon, the next incredible generational, you know, the next goat in the making so soon. He's having a great season. He's playing well. He's feeling confident. And I think what we need to do, and obviously the media is going to pour on undue pressure on this kid because that's what they do. That's what they're going to do. And so polls like this are saying, is he the best player in the world at the moment? I would say as a Madridista, I don't believe so. He's not the best player in the world at the moment. That he can possibly be the best player in the world at some point in his career if he continues along these lines, 100%. But we have to look at things, definitely have to look at things in a level-headed manner and not be reactionary. And reactionary can be both negative and positive. You can be reactionary in either one of those spectrums. You can be reactionary one where you say, oh my God, Gareth Bale got injured again. He's the biggest bastard on the planet. He's just sucking money out of us. So I'm going to throw a fucking marker at his car because I'm an idiot, which unfortunately did happen. Not that I threw it at it. But like, you know, that people go to those lengths, and I have no respect for fans like that. And you aren't Madridistas, you're just idiots. Because people think that because they're passionate fans, because, oh my God, because I love Madrid, because they're my team, you don't understand how much I live and breathe and die. Look at all the money I've spent on this fucking studio because I love Real Madrid. But I, you know, that is love. That is passion. I have passion for Real Madrid. Look, my studio is full of jerseys and posters of Sergio Ramos, who doesn't even play for the team anymore. And then, of course, you know, and left me so sad when he had to leave and he didn't stay, damn it, and he went to PSG. And I'm still bitter about that. But anyway, look at this. You know, I've spent all this money and all these things. I mean, that is a passion without going and exceeding it and saying, you know, what I'm going to do is I'm going to travel to Spain, which, you know, I am somebody who can, you know, at some point, you know, I'm going to travel to Spain, but I'm not going to, what my goal in life isn't to stand outside and yell at the players as they go by and you know, probably it would try to see them go in. Sure, I'll try. But if they did bad, I'm not going to be saying, you know, I'm not going to be throwing shit or kicking their cars or whatever it is, you know, that we've seen in the past, not only from Real Madrid fans, but from Barcelona fans. We saw the things they did against Ronald Koeman when, you know, when he was leaving after some of these games they had. You're not a passionate fan when you do that. You're not a fan. You're an idiot. You're a hooligan. You're like somebody who has no life other than this, than putting all their eggs in a basket. And all their eggs in a basket is essentially that you have no life other than believing that these players owe you something for every single time they go out on the field. You know, sure, you as a fan, they want to make you happy because you are the fans of the team that they are a part of. And yes, there should be some loyalty on their part to the crest and to do their best because they are professionals. But at the end of the day, they are professionals. You know, they go out of their way to do the best job they can for their team because they don't want to lose their jobs. They don't want to lose their position. They don't want to lose out to, you know, be benched. They don't want to be traded to another team, especially now if they're at Real Madrid. You know, so they're all, what they have to do is put in the work and be professionals. And essentially, they are trying to do their job, you know. And sometimes you go to work and you do and you aren't as good and you don't do well. And with Bale, I could say, yes, people are saying, oh, you know, but the guy has problems with injuries. The guy has problems, you know, he has other issues. Yeah, he doesn't handle things the best way. But the best thing as us as Madridistas is the best thing for us as Madridistas to, you know, basically, you know, throw shit at him and stuff like that because he can't play. I mean, why are we blaming him? I know it sucks that he's injured again, but why are we blaming him for that? And I know, yes, he's got a huge wage bill and he hasn't done anything for the team. And you know, what is it, like going on almost four seasons now that he hasn't really done anything for Real Madrid. So I understand that you can be angry, but the last thing you're going to do is, like, I don't know. I just don't think anything justifies you being violent against someone that you, number one, don't know on person. You don't know him personally. Number one, you know, aside from the fact that he plays on the football field and, you know, plays for your team, you have any right to do that shit. You know, I always tell people, I mean, I always think this is one of the things I want to say before I move on from this whole subject. Unless you're the type of person that gambles on football and you're putting a lot of money into some of these games, which I just don't, I'm not somebody who cares about that. I really think it's kind of idiotic to get so angry when a team loses, other than, you know, your pride, than it hurting your pride as a fan, and you wanting them to do well because you are a fan and you are passionate about the team and you love the team. But to get so angry that you want to get violent against the team because they're playing badly or because you feel that they've wronged you in some way, to get violent is either your life doesn't end if Real Madrid loses, or any team for that matter. Your life doesn't end. And I always say, are you losing money? That's what I say. Like, I mean, a lot of times I'm like, when somebody reacts that way and like cries and loses their mind after a team, you know, and some of these, you know, like I call them self-hating Madridistas or whatever, that all they do want to do is shit on the team after the team loses. One of the things that I wonder is it really that bad when they lose, so much so that you got to cuss out the entire team and say that everyone's worthless, you know, all this stuff? I mean, I understand that there's a need for self-reflection by the team. You know, if you're doing badly, there is a need for criticism and what we like to call constructive criticism, you know. But the funny thing is we're all, many of us, if we are not pundits in the sense of we are not people that are trained sports, I mean, not even sports journalists. I mean, a lot of times I always feel like, and maybe this comes from the fighting background that I had, but a lot of times the things that bother, and maybe this is where it comes from, because what bothers me the most, I think, about people, like, you know, talking about tactics, talking about, you know, Ancelotti should have put this player over another player and anything like that. You know, unless you've played, you know, I always feel like unless you've played professionally, unless you've coached professionally, you can all say you know the game, but all of us are there because we're fans. All of us are really here because we're fans. We're watching them because we're fans. I don't think any of us have one iota. We believe we do because everyone believes they do have the same knowledge as the guys that are out there on the pitch, you know? And it's the same thing that disgusted me. I remember being a fight fan, being a fighter, and then even being a fighter and being a coach, where I would go as somebody who knows the sport in and out, when I talk about combat sports, who I feel I know the sport and have had experience in the sport to the point where, you know, I was a professional in that sport because I both coached and fought for many years, over 12 years. To see somebody at a bar, drunk out of his mind, just staring up at a screen and telling a professional fighter, or thinking they could tell a professional fighter what he did right or what he did wrong during his training camp, you know, And to me, that's just bonkers because it's the, you know, and we call it Monday morning quarterbacking here in the United States, which is essentially coming in on Monday morning, which is after the game on a Sunday, and believing that in hindsight, they should have done this, 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 and this, and that, when you really have no clue about what are the inner workings of the field. Obviously, you know, and I think it's the same thing when we think that players on a pitch, you know, players, what they're demonstrating on a pitch, or that, you know, your favorite player, this is the one, that your favorite player isn't playing, and people, oh, why doesn't Ancelotti put on Hazard, or why doesn't he put on Jovic, or why doesn't he put on this player or that player? He's probably got an agenda against him. Agenda. That's the word that gets thrown around on Twitter all the time, because you're a fan of that player. But you don't know, and we don't know, unfortunately, the inner workings of what is going on the pitch. Why is it that they're not playing him? Is it his attitude? Is he not doing well on the field? Maybe he's not getting along with the rest of his teammates. Maybe the chemistry isn't there. And chemistry isn't important in a team game. Maybe the other team players don't really respect him. Maybe they don't feel that he's got the talent. And that's what they're doing. So the coach, one of his jobs is, where can I make sure and who can I put on the field that I feel are going to maximize my chances of winning? And that is obviously going to be the guys that have the best chemistry together. Sometimes not always the best guys, but the guys that have the best chemistry together as well. Now, of course, you know, you're going to try to put on their best player, even if he's a dick. But I guarantee you, if one player is a dick and he might be the best player in the world, but he's got 10 other players on the field who want nothing to do with him, it doesn't matter how good he is. I don't think that team is going to succeed. So, you know, I'm sure that they, you know, Ancelotti has to look at all of these things before he fields people. So, and for us to come in and be as fans trying to, you know, we can, like I said, we can criticize. No one is above criticism. But when it turns into violence and it turns into like this shithousery of talking trash and all this stuff that I see on Twitter and then essentially that I see on football Twitter, but then essentially it goes into the streets like we've seen in Spain, where it goes into where you're going to physically, attack a fighter. I mean, it's not a fighter, sorry. You're going to physically attack. You wouldn't want to physically, as a fan, don't physically attack a fighter because trust me, it's not going to go well. But if you are going to like try to physically attack a player, even if it's his property, it's still his property, you know. And I feel like it's a lot of times this shit where I hear people like, oh, well, they have money, they should, you know. And it's ridiculous to me that we feel like these guys, simply because they're making millions of dollars off of a sport that we love, we're watching it, so we're essentially the ones that are making them these millions of dollars, you know. That you would think also and not remember the fact that these are human beings. They're just like you and I that have taken up the sport professionally and want to do something that you would probably love to do and get paid for, but they're just a lot better than you at it. And, you know, criticize the fact, you know, just not understand that they get tired, they get injured, they have issues with mental health, probably, you know, family issues or other issues, a death in the family. All those things can affect their game. You know, and that overworking them as well is not a good thing. Well, why can't I play? You know, I saw somebody on Twitter post something the other day and I commented on it, and it was somebody said like, oh, I don't understand why these players, you know, bitch about, you know, playing three games a week, you know, all the time, and then training like five times a week or whatever. You know, I go to school and I go to work, and then I also play. I also go to training 5 days a week, and then I play, you know, two games a week, you know, which is bullshit. It's bullshit to have that come from that mentality, because unless you're a professional athlete that is training like a professional athlete, you have no say. Trust me, you have no say. You, none of the, like this person that said that, you know, why are they bitching and complaining? I think they should play more. You don't understand the type of training and the type of commitment it takes to play, and the type of all the training and nutrition and everything that goes in, all the hard work that goes into being a professional athlete, nor does your weekend league bullshit of you going out and playing kickabout with a bunch of other guys that are just laborers as well, that, you know, are just doing this non-professionally as well. Does it compare in any way to a professional athlete? You know, and I would get the same thing, you know, like fighters, you know, listen, one of the reasons I stopped fighting was because I stepped into the ring with a guy who is now in the UFC, one of them who is now in the UFC, and I got knocked out. And what I realized after that was, for me, fighting was serious. Like I was thinking, or at this point was a professional, but did I want to be a world champion? Did I really want it that bad? I had a career and everything as well in outside of fighting, but some of the guys that were fighting had no other career. Their only career was fighting. So for them, that's all they had. And believe me, that changes the way they fight. That changes the way they came out and came at me. And he knocked me the fuck out, because for me, I was just a regular dude that, sure, wanted to be, you know, in my head, a professional fighter, but didn't have the dedication as a real professional fighter whose only goal in life was really to become a professional fighter. And he knocked me the fuck out. And after that, I was like, yeah, maybe I don't want it as much. You know, I have a career. I have other things. I can save my jaw, my brain, all that kind of stuff, and maybe pursue a different thing. Maybe be a podcaster and talk about fighting, which I did. And then later on, you know, because I love football, also talk about football. So that's what I do, you know. But those guys are on a different level. And for these guys that play professional football, it's the same thing. They're at a different level. This is what they eat, sleep, and breathe football. Most of them have no other thing. Believe me, if they had something else to do, they wouldn't be the players that they are, you know? So you guys have to keep that in mind. So, you know, you have to keep that in mind. But they are human beings, you know? And they're really good at what they do, and they train really hard, and nothing that you do in your daily life can compare to what they do, in the sense of, not saying hard work. I'm talking about, if you're saying that your regular little weekend games are the same as what they do, you know, or the training that you do on a weekly basis for your little weekend games is anything compared to what they do as professional athletes. It's not the same. Because I think for them, everything, their livelihood, their families, everything is riding on that football game. Where all of us, not everything is riding on this football game, this weekend game that we play. You know, this guy that commented on Twitter, a lot of things relied on, of course, his you know, he was talking about going to school. He was talking about going to work. That is what he was, that's what made his life. You know, for them, it's this other stuff. They got the chance to play football professionally, but there is a contract that they have to abide by. They have to make sure they do certain things. They have to maintain weight. They have to be in form. They have to, not only that, they have to compete with other guys who are also badasses, which is, we've seen with Real Madrid when James Rodriguez came on the team. You know, and I'm a Colombian fan, and he came on the team, and he had to compete with the likes of Isco at that time, who was playing very well, the likes of Luka Modric, the likes of Casemiro, the likes of Toni Kroos. How was he going to break into a starting 11 unless he was an absolute maniac, you know, and playing at the top of his game every single day, game in, game out, all the time? So they have to maintain that. And don't believe that there isn't pressure there. There's definitely pressure there, because they know one slip up, the coach is going to bench him, because there's other guys in there waiting in line. And not only there, in La Filial, in Castilla, a young kid waiting, hungry to break into the first team, that if you don't show up, he'll sit your ass down. And we're seeing that with Eden Hazard too. You know, we're seeing that with Eden Hazard. Eden Hazard reportedly not putting in the work in training. Apparently doesn't have, you know, and this is all, you know, allegedly, you know, from, you know, Chiringuito and other things that have been said, that he's not putting in the work, that Ancelotti doesn't have the same faith in him. He just, you know, he's not the starter, because essentially what had happened is a young Vinicius that is hungry, that looks amazing and is playing amazing right now, sat his ass down. And it looks like it's going to remain that way for the rest of the season if Vinicius continues like this. If Vinicius continues like this, there is no reason Eden Hazard is going to step on the field other than to be a super sub when Vinicius is tired of running through defenders and, you know, making sure they get kicked off if they try to fuck with him. So, and coaches too, getting red carded and kicked off the field, because we saw that. during with the game against Granada. But anyway, the point is, you know, be fucking civilized people, man. You know, if your goal is to like cuss out a player, I mean, I'm sorry, if you get your kicks out of cussing out players or and going on Twitter and, you know, shooting your little shit on there and talking your trash or whatever and you know, making all these dumb ass threads that really, you know, there's so much idiocy on there. You know, I got no time for it. And I think a lot of people don't either. But, you know, moving on. The game against Granada, of course, Zo Vinicius, speaking of him, essentially, he wasn't having a great game. At least I feel in the first half, he was almost, you know, not, you know, wasn't his best game. But the thing is, the crazy thing is, in that second half, he has this magical moment. He's had a couple of magical moments where he is just toying with the Granada defense. And of course, toying with Monchu, who was the right back of Granada. And that poor dude could not stop him no matter what happened. So what did he do? He decided to be a dick and he decided to try to foul Vinicius as much as he could. And he ends up getting sent off for it. A clear, clear red card, because it had not been a red card. I believe he already had a yellow card. And then if he wasn't straight redded for that tackle, he would have gotten a yellow card anyway and been ejected from the game. So he was lucky he didn't get ejected earlier with that elbow that he hit Vinicius in the face, where he has a face, where he makes a face like he legitimately wanted to crack Vinicius. So that guy, and it was because Vinicius was toying with them, you know, toying with them in the second half, absolutely spectacular. I mean, let me just throw some stats up here with Vinicius. You know, this is from SofaScore, guys. So 7.9 rating. I'm throwing it up on the screen for you guys that are listening. So, I mean, really, honestly, you know, besides the goal, which, you know, he got, really, Vinicius, I would say, wasn't his greatest game other than, of course, it's just the magic. It's just the insanity. It's just the stress that he causes the defenses. You know, like, we can see that he does that. When he comes out onto the pitch, he does that to players. He does that to the opposition. He drives them nuts. And it doesn't matter. And the thing is, it opens up things for the rest of the team to essentially capitalize on. And that's what happened in this game. Wasn't his greatest game in that regard. But then that one magic moment where he flips out the entire defense so much that they go after him and they're trying to beat the shit out of him. And then one guy gets red carded, and then the coach of Granada complains and also gets kicked out. That is what Vinicius does to you. He drives them nuts. That was essentially what we saw from Vinicius. A player that the opposition was so frustrated with because they could not stop him and could not catch him, that they lose their shit, or essentially they lose their cool and have to end up kicking him and trying to bring him down another way because they have no other way of stopping him. Now, we've seen this, and the funny thing is, you know, this is stuff I've heard. You know, we saw reactions like this to players like Ronaldinho, reactions like this to players like Neymar, which, you know, he still gets brought down a lot, essentially. Yeah, and some of the times he flops, of course, a lot of the times he does. People are going after him because they can't stop him any other way. And Vinicius is in that same regard, is doing that to players now. I mean, if you look at it, so he got one goal, you know, which was assisted by Luka Modric, who had a fantastic game. He had 61 touches, 84% of his passes were accurate. He had one key pass. But besides that, I mean, if you look at the dribbles, you know, essentially his take-ons or his ground duels, he had 17 of them and he won 10 of them. So basically, you know, he was doing a great job, and he was fouled three times. He was drawing fouls and getting the opportunities, you know, making opportunities to create fouls in order to get Real Madrid more chances. He got, of course, like I said, he got the goal. He shot on goal three times. He had seven dribbles, five of them being successful. And of course, you know, going back to those ground duels, he had 17 of them, 10 of them successful. So he was really doing his job on that left flank and driving players nuts. But of course, where it really comes down, you know, the two stars of this this game against Granada were none other, of course, than Luka Modric and Toni Kroos, who once again showed what they are made of. And then also, a lot of people were talking about Casemiro, and Casemiro hasn't looked the same as of late, but he put in two very important passes. One was essentially that clean assist to Ferland Mendy at the end of the game to score four, to make the goal 4-1. A beautiful cutting pass from Casemiro, filtered pass right through the middle, and Ferland Mendy was on the end of it to score it and give us the 4-1 and basically putting the game away for sure. But Casemiro had that. And then Casemiro was also the player who got that entire beautiful counterattack started when he, you know, he gets the ball out to Benzema, who is running down the right-hand side. Vinicius is running up the middle. Modric is running up the left-hand side. And Benzema goes all the way down, a quick, lethal, very Madrid, Real Madrid counterattack. Benzema then, you know, as he's going into the box, cuts it, you know, gives a basically a horizontal pass all the way to Luka Modric. Luka Modric could have scored it, but what he does is he cuts it back to Vinicius, who was standing right there, and Vinicius, of course, scores. And that was a beautiful counterattack that started essentially with Casemiro. So I think Casemiro had a strong game. So once again, that midfield of ours, that old school midfield of ours, continuing to be extremely tough. Now, I'll talk a little bit more about that afterwards, because I know Ancelotti said, you know, that for him they're the three best, they're the two best midfielders in the world, that he's not going to change that midfield trio. And I think for many Madridistas that sounds terrible, because they want to see some rejuvenation in the squad and not relying on a guy who's 36 years old at this point, and Kroos, who's also, you know, 31 and getting older as well, and they are, of course, getting slower and they're tired and things like that. And we're seeing it with Casemiro, who hasn't been playing well, and I think it's because he has been tired, but he had a good game. So but Toni Kroos, and I mean Toni Kroos was absolutely phenomenal. They SofaScore gave him an 8.5 rating. I don't really look at these things when it comes to that, because I don't really know what that means. I mean, I think that's pretty much subjective, I guess, you know, where that 8.5 comes from. But anyway, but the actual stats, you know, he got two assists. Well, you know, of course, the assist to the goal from Nacho, the assist to the goal, the first goal, the opening goal, which was Asensio, the second goal from the corner, which was to Nacho. Was it from the corner? It was from the corner, then to Modric, then Modric passed it back to him. So, you know, his assist to Nacho. 97% pass accuracy, as always. Four key passes, guys. Eight long balls. And the crazy thing is, eight long balls, and all eight of them were accurate. Crosses, two. None of the crosses actually worked, though. But shots on target, he had one shot off target, which was could have been a goal, could have been an assist for Benzema, who also, Benzema had four key passes. I think Benzema could have gotten an assist himself. But besides that, ground duels won by Toni Kroos, two. He had two out of two, essentially. Big chances created, two. And it's just the key passes for the assists to 85 touches, 97% of the passes being successful. Insanity. I mean, he had an absolutely beautiful game. Everything starts and stops with Toni Kroos. And if not, you got Luka Modric as well, who also had, you know, he had his one assist. Of course, that assist to Vinicius for the third goal of the game. 83% pass accuracy, two key passes. He also had three accurate long balls in the game. One big chance created, of course. And besides that, you know, ground duels. He didn't win his ground duels. He lost possession quite a bit. Did attract some fouls. But besides that, he was once again a workhorse up and down the pitch, and just doing a phenomenal job. I mean, when these guys are on, when they're on, man. So it's pretty crazy to me. These guys, you know, and Ancelotti said it in the press conference. He said, you know, that they sometimes do things that he doesn't even ask them to do, where essentially, you know, where he's saying, you know, sometimes Modric drops back and helps out the defense. And if it's not Modric, then sometimes could also do it. It's like they all rotate. They kind of know each other well enough to know who's going to step back and then who's going to be the one that ventures forward. So they alternate between Kroos and Toni, between Kroos and Modric, to kind of be that creative outlet for the team. And Casemiro, of course, being the wall in the midfield, and he just plays much better. And we're seeing that Casemiro plays much better when he has a creative mind like Toni Kroos or Modric on the pitch, which is why I think it's going to be very difficult that we're seeing, you know, these things that we've been hearing, of course, that, of you know, from Ancelotti after the game, that he's not really going to switch these guys up very often, which I think is just him after the fact saying, you know, making a joke, because he said, you know, don't worry, Madridistas, I'm not going to change these guys, or I'm not going to take them out or whatever. And I think it was just kind of him just joking around, because it was like, you know, don't mess with what's not broken or whatnot. But, you know, he's going to have to, because we saw the same issues last season. Sure, right now we're, you know, right now this time frame in the next few, I think in the next few games, obviously, is going to be very rough, playing some very tough teams, having games, you know, multiple games in, you know, games in the week and then games on the weekends. It's going to be very difficult for them to maintain their fitness and not get tired. And he's going to have to swap out players. You know, one of the rough things is going to be Valverde, but Valverde hadn't, you know, he was looking good. I think Valverde is one of our best midfielders, not part of that trio. He is the best midfielder, not part of that trio, is definitely Valverde. And then he's got Camavinga, of course, who can step in there, but still is very green. We've seen that. And then, you know, the other thing that I'm kind of, in that regard, I do worry about is why he's not using the likes of somebody like Antonio Blanco, which we saw did well, you know, last season in a pinch for Zinedine Zidane, and was supposedly going to be given more minutes, and we haven't seen it. Now, it remains to be seen if that's going to happen during Copa del Rey, and, you know, if these guys are going to get more of a few minutes to play, definitely guys like Miguel Gutierrez and, of course, Antonio Blanco. You know, those guys, I hope they get more chances, because I think those are the guys that we definitely, especially Antonio Blanco, Camavinga, Valverde, those are the guys that are, from what we all know, are the guys that are, in a lot of ways, going to have to pick up the mantle from this incredible midfield trio. But the thing is, guys, like I said, if it's not broke, don't try and fix it. Now, that works against teams like Granada, and that's where I agree with a lot of people. That works against teams like Granada, teams that are lower in the rankings. But, you know, once against tough teams, like, you know, we saw last season against a team like Chelsea, against, you know, these other teams that their midfield is not only talented but is very quick, and essentially can run circles around the likes of Modric and Kroos, who aren't guys who are pacey. We're going to need guys like Camavinga, guys like Pedro Valverde, who can keep up with those. The problem is you lose a little bit of the creativity. You lose, not a little bit, you lose quite a bit of the creativity, quite a bit of the experience, and you lose also quite a bit of the skill at this point. Not saying that those guys are not skilled, but you're going to lose that, what I would say is the experience factor, you know, but you're going to make up with it. You know, there was an old Kung Fu saying, I think, which was, you know, experience should fear the strength of youth. So experience is one thing, but you need that youthfulness too. And when you combine things like a Kante in Chelsea with, you know, guys like Mason Mount and Jorginho running at you, you know, who are younger, you know, some of them are, you know, not all, you know, Jorginho isn't a quick guy, but they're Kante is pacey, you know. So you have those guys who can really not only defend, but have speed, and they will cause problems to you. So that's going to, you know, we're going to see that. I don't think, I don't think Ancelotti's stupid and is going to be like, no, I'm not going to move these guys around whatsoever, no matter what happens. Zidane didn't move them around as much because of the fact that he had no other options. He really didn't have Valverde. He didn't have Camavinga at that time. Antonio Blanco was somebody that was brought in late in the game, late in the season. So, he really didn't have many options except for to play Modric, Casemiro, and Kroos. You know, Odegaard was gone, and Odegaard isn't a guy who's your box-to-box midfielder. Isco, of course, you know, we know there was no trust in him, and essentially I think many of us, at least myself, I don't have a lot of faith in Isco. I think he's good to maybe bring on at the end of the games. He does, you know, have creativity, but that's not something that I would rely on too much anymore, and it doesn't seem like he's happy either. So But yeah, I think we're going to see more rotation towards the end of the season. I had this Luka Modric thing on the screen there for quite some time. But and then Benzema, I think Benzema, you know, he had four key passes, none of them which I think, you know, he could have gotten those assists if those passes were converted, you know, those key passes were converted to goals. He would have gotten those assists, created a couple big chances. You know, of course, he did some amazing work, obviously, during that counterattack that led to the Vinicius goal. Essentially got what I would say a semi-assist. He passed the ball to Modric. Modric could have scored, but Modric passed it to Vinicius. It ended in a goal. So I think he did. I think he does. I mean, when he's not having his greatest on it scoring, you know, he's not on top of it scoring goals, Benzema is still involved, and his work rate, I think, is second to none as a striker, just dropping back, helping out the midfield. It doesn't matter, you know, what he's, you know, where he is on the pitch, he's helping out and he's doing something positive for the team. So even though it wasn't goal-wise, it wasn't a great performance from Benzema. All around, the team looked beautiful. The team looked solid. The team looked great. And not so much in the first half, but in the second half, we started to see them coming together and doing well. And this bodes well. This bodes well against Sheriff, and this bodes well for the games that are coming up. You know, another thing, of course, having Carvajal, I think somebody mentioned Asensio improves when Carvajal is on the pitch. And I think that has a lot to do with what I always, and this is my own philosophy. I don't think if you guys believe in it. But my own philosophy is, like I said, when you have your starting players on the pitch, I think what it is it helps the chemistry. Because at the end of the day, when you have the guys that you know are the best in their position, it in a lot of ways takes some of the pressure off the other players and allows them to focus on what they do best. So let's say Asensio, if somebody like Odriozola, you know, who obviously is not with the team anymore, but I mean, he's at Fiorentina. But when Odriozola was there, or you have a Lucas, well, you know, or you have a Lucas Vazquez, somebody who's a stand-in for Carvajal, you have these guys come in, then, you know, you're probably going to get the directive from Ancelotti or whoever the coach is to say, hey, I'm going to need you to help a little bit on defense today. You know, our starter is not in. Carvajal is not in. So you may need to help a little bit, you know, help out a little bit. Or Nacho, who is not a usual right back. I need you to help out a little bit. So when they're trying to do, when you have wingers that are trying to assist on defense, You lose a little bit, I think, of that free-flowing football because they're now having to second-guess some things when they are on the pitch. And I feel like that is why does Carvajal make Asensio better? I think his presence just makes the team better. I mean, I've seen it time and time again. When Carvajal is healthy, the team, the defense just looks completely different. It looks more solid. Less shaky. I mean, when we have the players, the necessary players in the back line, then, you know, in our back line, when we have those guys, obviously last season being guys like Varane and Sergio Ramos for many seasons were that, you know, those solid guys and Pepe and, of course, you know, going further back, Fernando Hierro. When you had these type of guys on the pitch, you didn't really have to worry so much, you know, so much of the wingers didn't have to really worry so much about, not to say they don't track back, but their focus is 100% on, I'm going to take this ball forward and I am going to score. I'm going to cut inside, I'm going to score, or I'm going to cross it into the box because I know that a striker is coming in. You know, they have more of, I would say, more time, less pressure, and more ability to focus on their number one job, which in that case for the forwards is definitely to score and create chances. So that's what I think in that regard. So that's really it, guys. I mean, I think I covered everything I wanted to talk about. Obviously, like I said, Ancelotti, I definitely think he's going to switch out and rotate these players. I don't think we need to get worried that, you know, that Kroos, Modric, and Casemiro are going to be playing every single game, all season long. You know, we have players that can come in and help out. Of course, Valverde is injured right now, but of course we can have guys like Camavinga, and I hope, like I said, Antonio Blanco get more chances. But there are guys that can rotate if those guys, you know, when those guys need a chance and need a breather. So I definitely think, you know, but we're starting to see them once again come back together and showcase what we know they have, which is you know, Modric just looking phenomenal at 36 years of age, and Kroos, you know, looking phenomenal as well. Doesn't look like, you know, he's getting you know, getting any closer to retirement, although he says he wants to at some point. At 33, I think he said he wanted to. So, but I still think we have them at least for another season, doing really well, doing helping out this season. They're going to be very solid. We definitely need to rotate them. I agree with all of you on that. We definitely need to bring in some new blood and have something set up for when these guys leave. And preferably we start moving those pieces now so that it doesn't hit us like a ton of bricks when all of a sudden these two guys, or especially, I mean, even when Modric is gone, you know, when Modric is gone, that's going to be one piece that falls, one domino, and that has an effect. And then you're going to have Kroos, and then you're going to have Casemiro, and you're going to have to move on from them at some point and have new blood. And that new blood we've seen, is it going to be Camavinga? I think, I mean, I have a lot of faith in Camavinga. I think he just needs time. He's 18 years old. I think Valverde is phenomenal. I love the guy. So I think, you know, but we need them to get playing time as well. So that's going to be an important thing. But with all that said, guys, that is my podcast. That is the podcast for today. I appreciate you guys all coming back and listening. Once again, I am Eric Rivera, and this is the, you know, the, sorry, I always blast that. This is the Nada Más, the Real Madrid podcast. So anyway, guys, remember you can follow me on, Twitter at Nada Más Podcast. You can follow me on Facebook at Nada Más Podcast as well. Also check out our Instagram, guys. We're always throwing up different graphics and things like that on our Instagram. That is @YNM Podcast. Also our website, inadamas.net, where we are occasionally throwing up articles on there. You can also catch the podcast on our website as well. If you have any suggestions, if you have any, you know, we're definitely looking for sponsors, people that can help us out, not necessarily monetarily, guys. You know, would love to, you know, have somebody monetarily sponsor the podcast. But if you have an app, if you have an app that you are, you know, an app that you use to for stats and things like that, an app that you've created for stats, like, you know, these guys like at One Football, like these guys at FUTMob, at SofaScore, anything like that, and you want to, you know, you want to advertise on the podcast, let me know. Just hit me up. Hit us up at info@inadamas.net. That is our email address. Hit us up there. Or if you have, you know, I don't know, a company that sells jerseys or anything like that, and you are trying to get, you know, more advertisement on that, help me help you. You know, essentially we could just exposure that way. And that is all I'm asking there. Besides that, guys, you know, check us out, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn. We are on iHeartRadio, which is here in the United States. We are pretty much everywhere that podcasts are found. And always remember, please, guys, if you are on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating. Leave us also a comment if you can, because it helps us rise up there and helps this podcast grow. Anyway, guys, I can't wait to talk about what happens against the Sheriff Tiraspol game. I know we can win that game and get the revenge on these guys and essentially cement ourselves into the second round, or the round of 16 of the Champions League. But that's it, guys. Thank you for listening once again to Y Nada Más, a Real Madrid podcast. Talk to you again soon.
This has been Y Nada Más, al Real Madrid podcast.